Jim Woolsey, old friend, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of people watching this don't know that. They don't know you went to Tulsa Central High School.
Did indeed.
And then to Stanford.
Did.
And then gone from Oklahoma and
causing trouble.
Thanks for being here.
Honored.
Today. We'll have a good visit. We kind of drink out of the same cup, but let's talk a little energy. What do you think now that we're in a spot where we don't need Mideast oil anymore?
Well, I think we ought to finish the job, and as much as we can without spending a lot of federal money, help a transition occur for us being able to use natural gas for transportation.
But we don't have to use federal money.
Well, that's good. We certainly don't have to use federal money because gas is cheaper than practically everything else. I mean, the market would work that way if there weren't blockage in the market. And I think that you've been right for a long time on wanting to use natural gas, CNG, and LNG for trucks and buses and big vehicles.
But
it
pays
for itself quickly. It's a great idea.
But you've got additions to that.
I think now that gas is so cheap as a result of fracking and the discoveries, that there's an opportunity to have very minor modifications made to regular automobiles, a family car, under $100 a car, $95 MIT says, and let it run, able to be run on methanol, wood alcohol, so you could pull into the filling station and choose.
You're talking about?
For the family car.
Yeah, but you have that same situation. Brazil?
Yeah, Brazil does it with ethanol because they got all that sugar cane down there and they can make ethanol cheaply and drive on ethanol or gasoline. But we could do it with methanol, and that creates another source for transportation fuel, natural gas, maybe some wood chips, who knows. That creates a way to keep OPEC from running their cartel and running the prices. Now, right now, they're being kind of nice to the world and the prices are kind of low. For oil.
I think they like the fact they've pushed off swing producer.
Well, I think they probably do like that, but who doesn't like low prices for oil is particularly Iran and Russia and Venezuela. And all three of those countries are serious problems for the democracies of the world and for you and me. And I think low prices, $40 or less a barrel for oil, and it would be a wonderful thing for anybody who's trying not to be taken over by the Russians, the Venezuelans, or the Iranians.
Yeah. It's better than an army.
It is.
But you're not going to stay down here on price.
Well, there's a chance you might be able to stay down pretty low on oil prices by being able to use natural gas to produce methanol and have the competition.
Do you think you're headed in that direction?
Well, what has to happen is there has to be some incentive to the automobile companies to make those cars, even if it's only $95, they balk at doing it, make those cars so they can run on either alcohol, methanol mainly, or gasoline. And I think there's a pretty simple way to do that. Give them CAFE credits for it instead of the CAFE credits, which they have to really work hard to get the cars light enough and so forth to match those. Just give them the CAFE credits for, say, half of their fleet being able to run on more than one fuel.
But it's hard to do when you have $2 gasoline.
You save more if you got $3 gasoline, but you're still, even at $2 gasoline and with the prices of oil and so forth where they are, you're still, according to the MIT study of a couple of 3 years ago, kind of in the ballpark of being able to drive at 70-80% of the cost on methanol that you're driving on for gasoline now. And 70-80%, that's not bad. That's a change.
Okay, to get to where you want to go, though, mm-hmm. You've got to have some legislation.
Well, the only thing I think you need is to give something to the car companies. Give them CAFE credits for making those cars able to run on both.
That is a legislator.
Yeah.
It's got to provide that for you.
But it doesn't cost any money.
Oh, I agree.
It's not any bad of anybody's pocket.
Well, I like it.
It increases freedom for the car companies. And once they can do that, it's up to them to put in the pumps at the gas stations and so forth. But this is not a huge thing. We know how to switch pumps at gas stations. I mean, we've done this before.
Okay, but do you have anything in line to accomplish that?
Nothing except the idea.
Okay.
I mean, I've been working with my friends, Gal Luft and Annie Korn and Bud McFarland and others on these ideas to get them out. But no, we haven't taken on the car
companies.
Well, you've got to
go ahead and clear the next hurdle.
Well, I'd be delighted to enlist you in our cause here.
Well, listen, I'm for it. Anything American.
Well, this is all American. This is American gas. Getting a little bit of a lead on American oil, but there's still a lot of uses for American oil.
Who would have believed where we are today on energy in America 10 years ago?
It's great. Yeah, it's great. Well, you've been such a leader in the gas world. I think that the fracking development, too, is something that is just been a huge change. And it's
horizontal drilling.
Horizontal drilling, mating up the fracking with the horizontal drilling. Because that has really made it possible to move and shift a lot faster on how you do things in the oil business. And people talk about how creative Silicon Valley is, and it is, on making computer chips and a lot of other things. But this part of the oil business, oil and gas business, has shown itself to be damn creative, too.
Oh, the industry, you gotta tip your hat to them.
Absolutely.
Because it's been an incredible. But why'd they do it?
Well, they did it to make money.
That's right.
Absolutely.
The capitalistic system.
Right.
It works.
It's called being an American.
That's right. And that's, you know, it's just unbelievable to me that if you ask people around the world, anywhere, where would you rather live than any place else?
Of course it's here.
It's here.
It's always here.
And the... okay, having said that, why do we keep screwing around with a system, and I don't think in a healthy way, the way our government goes about it? And in the federal government, you know, we're here to help you. No, it's okay. You respond.
Well, President Obama leans toward a sort of European social democrat type economy.
How are they doing?
Well, not so good. They tend to tag along behind us most of the time. And I disagree with him on this. I don't think that's the way we ought to be headed, either in medicine with Obamacare or anything else. I still call myself a Scoop Jackson Democrat because Henry Scoop Jackson was my boss.
And Washington State.
Marvelous
man. Boy, he was a great friend of the military.
Oh, he was terrific.
Yeah.
I used to be thought to be kind of liberal on domestic issues, and on one or two maybe I still kind of am, but my Democratic Party has kind of shot by me to the left, and I have not as much... to do with it as I once did.
But you know, what is it that this president, when you say, looks at the European structure and kind of wants us to go that direction? I don't get it.
And I think it's not just that he favors a social democratic approach, it's that he, I think, sees himself more as a citizen of the world than a citizen of a country that ought to provide leadership for the world. Whenever he gets on the verge of leading, like telling Assad that if he uses chemical weapons, don't cross that red line, Assad uses chemical weapons and gasses all sorts of women and children in Damascus, and President shrugs and turns it over to the Russians.
He said, "Where's that red line?"
Yeah,
it got brushed out.
And it's been that way more than once. I think that we've got a really serious problem in our not being taken seriously. Now we've got an aircraft carrier joining eight other ships headed for the Straits of Hormuz and that area. maybe that will keep the Iranians from smuggling guns into the Houthi, the Shia, who are about to take over the whole of Aden and so forth. But, you know, there was a time in which they would be really worried about us, what we might do. But they may figure, what's Obama going to do to us? Anything? Remember when our hostages were released by the Iranians after they'd had them over a year? They were released during Ronald Reagan's inaugural speech. The Iranians did not want Ronald Reagan to be president while they still had those hostages. They were afraid of what he had to do.
That's when they respected the president of the United States.
Right, and the president has to be held that way in, to some extent, in fear by our enemies and in admiration for being willing to take tough stands by our friends and everybody else. And I'm afraid that's not what we've got now.
You know, because of oil and, you know, my lifetime in the business, that I can very well remember Arab embargo, 73. And that is when a conscious decision was made in Washington, and at the time, it was a good decision, that they had to look to the Mideast for oil. I mean, that was where it was going to have to come from at some point. So we better get in there, establish ourselves. So Fifth Fleet, Bahrain, and we've been there ever since. Okay, now, in the morning, the President of the United States could safely say, I don't know whether everybody believed him or not. They're having trouble believing him now. But he could honestly say, we don't have to be in the Mideast for oil. Now, this is one I bet you don't remember, but at his nomination in Denver, this first, you won't believe, I was there. I was there. And he said at that speech, in 10 years, we will not import any oil from the Mideast. I've never heard him say it since, but I was there and I heard him that day.
Well, you know, I don't think the major issue is importing from the Middle East. I think the major issue is who controls the price and where do they put it.
And well, all we get from the Mideast today is $1,200,000.
Yeah, I know. I know. Historically, we've taken a lot less from the Middle East than a lot of people thought we were. But what really hurts is OPEC being able to set the price and then setting it high by holding down production in order to drive up what comes out of the pockets of our guys who are driving to work in the morning and the single mother who has to figure out how much she can afford for her kids' lunch and so forth. That's our problem. And by competing with oil, I think with alcohol, with methanol, and made by natural gas or wood or whatever, I think we've got a chance of keeping that price pretty far down. And oil needs a competitor. It doesn't really have one for transportation.
It hasn't had. But just think, the president said that when he was nominated.
Because it was the race against McCain was 08.
When it was. And when he said it, I thought, I wonder where that came from. Who put that in that speech? And I've never heard it again. Never. He was right. I mean, we don't have to have any oil for the Mideast. Less than 10 years from the date that he said it.
But and coming from the Mideast, or any place else, it is not good for our balance of payments, and we do better with employment if we're building the refineries here. That's all to the good. But from the point of view of what comes out of the workman's pocket and the single mother's pocket,
I couldn't agree
with
you
more. And
sure,
it's the control of that price by OPEC.
But
is a big problem.
I'm still making a point that he said that it's happened, and he doesn't even remember saying it.
That's probably right.
I'm the guy that said we won't have any oil from the Mideast in 10 years. Right. And I beat that. He doesn't even say that. And so I think, how many things has he read off that teleprompter?
They just kind of go.
Yeah. They're never mentioned again.
Yeah.
Okay. But we know that if you get competition for gasoline, diesel, mm-hmm. you can bring the price down. Hmm. And we know that there are fuels that can accomplish that for us. But why don't you have them? Because, one, I don't think Washington understands energy. Two, they don't have the leadership.
Well, part of the problem was that the car companies kept saying they didn't want a mandate. They didn't want to be ordered to do anything, even to put in something that costs $95, half the price of a seatbelt.
Yeah.
So we've been working, several of us, to come up with some ideas about how to do this without any mandates. And that's what's kind of neat about using the CAFE credits. If you mm-hmm. give the car makers CAFE credits for using more than one fuel rather than just for being able to have a lighter car.
Well, quit talking about it and do it.
Well, let's get together and make some progress. I'm with you.
We can do it.
Good, good.
At an interesting time in American history, we have the weakest president we've ever had, and that's, I think, pretty well agreed, known, and understood. And at a time when we really deserve better leadership.
Well, and it's not just weak. By caving in to the Iranians, as I think he is, in mm-hmm. these negotiations about the nuclear capabilities, we're going to get in a situation where before too many years, not only will Iran have a nuclear weapon, but other countries that see it and are in that part of the world and can afford it will do the same thing. The Saudis will have a nuclear weapon. The Turks will have a nuclear weapon. The Egyptians will have a nuclear weapon. So the next time we have a mess in the Middle East like we've got now with Sunni versus Shia and people versus people.
But that's been going on for centuries.
It has been, but they didn't have nuclear weapons until
We're getting ready to have
real problems.
Some problems in this country.
Yeah. Yeah, we are here too, but a Mideast crisis with 5 of the 8 countries involved having nuclear weapons, we may really wish for the Cold War again against the Soviets, where we had just 2 sides and they were at least halfway rational, even if they were bad guys.
That isn't going to happen.
No, that's right.
We do repeat mistakes, and you can look back and see where we've done that.
But in a screwy kind of way, I kind of missed the Soviets. It was easier dealing with them than it is with this current situation.
But that guy, he treats us.
The new guy. Oh, yeah, Putin is awful. He's Hitler without the anti-Semitism, as nearly as I can tell. He's running, taking over these neighboring countries very much the way Germany did in the late 1930s.
All we want is this one.
Yeah.
Then move on.
Yeah, move on to this one. Yeah.
Yeah. I said in remarks the other day, I said he's kind of a junior Joe Stalin. And
well, he might not mind that nearly as much as being called non-anti-Semitic Hitler.
I'm so, you know how old I am, and I'll be 87 next month. I just thank the Lord that I've been allowed to stay here and see what's happened. Because if I'd have died 5 years ago, and you had died yesterday, and you had come to heaven and told me what had happened after I left, I would have asked how that liar got in heaven. Because I would not have believed you. I would not have believed what you would have come and told me.
Well, you've done a lot of great things.
You're kind to say that, but it's been an interesting period that we've gone through this time. That election 16 is going to be
big deal.
Big deal. How many times have they said to you, this is the biggest election ever in the history of our country? I've had them tell me that 10 times now.
Well, it's easy to say, but for it to really be true, it doesn't happen very often, and I think this is one of the really big ones.
I think it is, too. Well, Jim, thanks.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.